Good morning, everyone. I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee to order on Thursday, March 14th. We have a quorum present. Our first agenda item this morning will be the approval of the minutes from March 12th, 2024. Vice Chair Hewitt.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We have a motion. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for March 12, 2024 are adopted. With us this morning, our first bill is House File 4691, Representative Cagle. Since you are not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 4691 be re-referred to transportation. Your bill is before us. If you would like to describe your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this bill has to do with a word that I can't pronounce, indemnification. I've been practicing.
Awesome.
So I got it. But really what this bill is, it's about, you know, the importance of passenger rail to Minnesota. So we're really hoping, you know, we're the second train to Chicago starts this year, and we've also dedicated the state federal funding match for the NLX. And we're really hoping to expand services in Minnesota, hopefully to Fargo-Moorhead area, St. Cloud, Mankato. And so the state needs to maintain some operational flexibility. Currently, Amtrak has a monopoly on passenger rail in Minnesota. And while Amtrak is the most likely operator of future passenger rail, it shouldn't be the only option. And I was actually just listening to the radio this morning. They were talking about Brightline. I can't remember the name of it. But they're starting train services from Los Angeles to Vegas. And so there are other options coming, it sounds like. Current station agreement agreement limits passenger rail service to Amtrak, which forces the state to use them and keep them as an operator for starting services. So this bill addresses the Amtrak monopoly by providing third-party liability coverage to Ramsey County and the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority for Union Depot, and could be applied to other train services that are added along the line. And so this is, you know, the state investment in passenger rail shouldn't be a result of financial burdens on local governments. And so we really just want to make sure that we are applying the requirements and getting all the liability insurance that we need. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers.
Would you like to go to your amendment first?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Sorry.
That's all right. You have the A1. Would you like to tell us what the A1 is about?
So what this does is it would have the indemnification. The policy would be gotten through Metro Council to get the policy instead of the state. So
okay. So I will move the A1, the House File 4691 A1 amendment. Is there any discussion by members to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 is adopted. Now we can begin testimony on House File 4691 as amended. And with that, we have with us Commissioner Ortega. If you'll state your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Rafael Ortega, Ramsey County Commissioner for District 5. Which includes the from Highland to the downtown and the east side and everything in between. Thank you, Representative Cagle, for your sharing the information. You're right on key. Ramsey County has been a supporter of passenger rail and freight rail that improves mobility for residents and businesses. The county has led multiple passenger rail and freight rail studies that focus on improved capacity in and around the Union Depot. This has made it the premier passenger rail station in the upper Midwest. The county invested over $100 million of its own funds into the renovation of the Union Depot, which saw the relocation of Amtrak services in May of 2014. The Union Depot is at the heart of the Minnesota's passenger rail plan, providing a connection to the long-distance Empire Builder service and proposed service to Chicago, Eau Claire, Fargo-Moorhead, Mankato, and Kansas City. The Amtrak monopoly creates a challenge for Ramsey County, Amtrak limits non-Amtrak trains to 13 per year. This eliminates the possibility of a non-Amtrak provider of passenger rail service to the Union Depot. Amtrak will not remove this limit without their indemnification for third-party liability up to the federal limit of $323 million. This bill is a solution to that challenge. Through the bill, Ramsey County is asking the state to cover the difference between its insurance and the federal liability cap. The county will maintain $50 million in coverage and would exhaust this insurance prior to the state being responsible for any cost. The benefit to the state is by allowing more than 13 non-Amtrak trains a year to access Union Depot. This provides an opportunity to quickly and cost-effectively provide more passenger rail to more places throughout Minnesota. This also provides a framework to assist other local government owners of passenger rail stations with liability that currently limits passenger rail. This allows the state passenger rail service to continue to utilize Union Depot, which receives $8 million in county funds annually for its operation and maintenance. The state will play a crucial role in addressing this cost so the non-Amtrak trains serve the Union Depot. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Ortega. It's nice to have you with us today, and we appreciate your testimony. Next, we will have Mike Rogers from Ramsey County to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Rogers, Deputy Director of Public Works, Multimodal Planning for Ramsey County. I don't have anything additional to add. I think Representative Cagle and Commissioner Ortega did a great job summarizing why this is important not only to the county but to the state. And I will just be here should there be questions.
All right. Thank you very much. We do not have any more testifiers on the list today. Is there anyone from the public wishing to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will move to member discussion. Members? Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can't believe there's no questions. Are there other, Representative Cagle, thank you for bringing this bill. Can you give me other examples where the state has indemnified other organizations other than maybe healthcare and reinsurance? But are there other physical plant indemnifications that the state has stepped in and covered excess liability for local units of government in the past?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Nadeau. Since I can barely say the word indemnification, I'm going to turn it over to my testifier for this.
Madam Chair, Representative Nadeau, I do not know offhand if there are any other cases. We can research that and get back to you with a response.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Further backup?
Yeah, and thank you. So does the Metropolitan Council, since the A1 was added, does the Metropolitan Council currently have adequate coverage that this would just be part of ongoing operations, or would this be a cost that the Met Council would incur moving forward?
Representative Cagle.
Madam Chair, Representative Nudeau, they do hold insurance policies for indemnification, but this would have to be a new one that they would seek out. And so, one of the things that we are working on between now and transportation is figuring out the fiscal note, and then, if that's something that Met Council can absorb, or if it's something that we would need to have money dedicated to.
Representative Nadeau, last question.
Yep, my final one. Thank you, Madam Chair. The note that House Research put together, it basically says that Amtrak's required to maintain this liability. My question is the Public Works Director or Deputy Director, my apologies. I mean, why aren't you negotiating this with Amtrak? Why are we being asked to pay for something that Amtrak should be covering?
Representative Nadeau, as you know, the questions come through the chair. So I appreciate it, but instead of just going directly to the deputy director, please just always send them to me, and then we'll ask the representative who she would like to have answered.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Cagle?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will defer to my testifier.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. The reason that this is kind of, it's kind of hard to understand is because our current agreement that brought Amtrak to Union Depot has liability coverage in it. The county has a $50 million policy. Amtrak then picked up the balance from the $50 million to the $323 million. And they did that only because they would then be able to have that monopoly on train service at the depot, other than those 13 non-Amtrak trains that they would allow every year. So to get them out of that monopoly, they said, okay, we'll leave, but that means you pick up all the liability, Ramsey County, between your insurance coverage and the $323 million. So the cost to get them out of the day-to-day operations at the depot is to pick up that liability, and the ability to have the flexibility down the road to allow any provider in that the county chooses and or the state chooses with adding passenger service, that is why it's important to get Amtrak out of the day-to-day piece.
Just one more, Madam Chair. I'm sorry.
Representative Nadeau.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And so my last question then is, what is the term of this contract? So if we're going to open this up to others, how long would the term of this contract with Amtrak be?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, I'll defer to my testifier.
Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, the current term of the contract when we signed it back in 2013 was for 40 years. So we currently have about 30 years left on that agreement.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question as I'm listening to this bill, and it's, you know, we basically want to open it up for anybody to be able to offer services here. So when we go for bid procedures or practice like that, are we going to, you know, when we see this increase, what it's going to cost us, we don't have a fiscal note yet, but is there a chance that we're going to save money by going out and opening it to the sheriff to be able to bid this, or what's the feeling on that?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say, you know, the competition hopefully would help, but I will also defer to my testifier on that as well.
Mr. Rogers.
Madam Chair, Representative. I think as the Representative Cagle had mentioned, Brightline is a new service. It's currently operating between Orlando and Miami, mm-hmm. and it's building between Vegas and the LA area. What that provides is an opportunity to get something in quicker, potentially a different style of service. I've been on the Brightline trains in Miami. They're very nice. They remind me quite a bit of European rail, where it's a very clean, very spacious environment, lots of service. That type of model between here and Chicago would be a very good model. It could also work to other destinations connecting Minnesota. So I think the importance is to say, let's get out there so that Amtrak, being a big nationwide organization, may be more focused on the Northeast Corridor than Minnesota. And because of that, may say, we can't get to you for 5-6 years, whereas a private company could come in and say, we can get to you next year working with the freight railroads or whomever. So I think it gives you speed and potential cost savings. Get that service in place.
Representative.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. to the author, question, Madam Chair, is on lines 1.110 and 1.10 and 1.14, the terms rail-related incidents. Mm-hmm. Can you define what all is entailed by a rail-related incident?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that might be a definition question for, would that be, would you be able to?
I can take a shot.
Mr. Rogers.
Madam Chair, Representative. The reason we're calling it out as rail-related incidences there is because it relates specifically to incidents that happen on either the platforms or the track at Union Depot, or the kind of the property adjacent to the track. We have a separate insurance policy that covers the building itself. And this would not impact that policy. So if an incident happened inside Union Depot, it would not be part of this liability protection. It would only be things happening on the track platforms themselves.
And Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, I mean, the conversation is around passenger rail, but is a rail-related incident also possibly some sort of a spill at Union Depot, other things that might go well past the $273 million delta quickly and thus put the state on the hook for something that might be far more costly, far more catastrophic, and not related to a passenger rail-like issue?
Mr. Rogers.
Madam Chair, Representative. I think the one way to look at this is to say Amtrak coming in, our agreements with Amtrak, Amtrak covers anything that happens with their trains. So they're 100% liable. If it's our responsibility, we're 100% liable. This is for liability related to third parties, so somebody not related to them. So say a freight train came through, they're going to be big enough that they'll be liable on their own to cover a spill cost, to cover something catastrophic like that. Where we're looking for protection is for something that's smaller than that. So a third-party train comes in, a separate passenger rail provider comes in, and something happens. It's not freight trains. We don't allow freight trains at Union Depot. The only freight trains we've had at the depot are, say, a locomotive that's come in and parked for a special event for our train days. We don't have regular freight service. So the three freight tracks just south of Union Depot are on freight railroad property, so an incident happening there, while it could impact Union Depot, they would be the ones liable on that before, and our insurance, of course, would kick in too. So the numbers are big here, and they are definitely for a catastrophic thing. We are a low-risk facility because we are only passenger trains. We don't have a lot of service as of today, and we have a 10-mile-an-hour speed limit. We're fully fenced, so it's not like we have a lot of stuff wandering in and off the property compared to, say, a section of track between two rural communities out in outstate Minnesota, something like that. So.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, you know, when we write bills using as specific a language as we possibly can, I think is incredibly important. And if you wanted to tighten that up, perhaps adding passenger rail-related incidents, on the outside chance that something does happen that is not passenger rail-related, certainly would like to make sure that the state is not on the hook for something that is not passenger rail related, if that's your intent, mm-hmm. And when you're passing this bill. So I think that would be very smart, particularly to protect the state. And, you know, I just wanted to, in closing, I wanted to sort of echo some of the comments that Representative Nadeau made, that this seems to be a rather one-off like thing that is taking a county off the hook. So I just think that sets some precedents that could be quite troublesome moving forward. And I did want to see if somebody from the Metropolitan Council was here and could provide some color for us, Madam Chair, because now that it's been engrossed into the bill, we hadn't heard testimony from the Met Council. And I do see Mr. Shetton in the back of the room. Oh, look, there he is.
And we will keep this limited. We're going to close this bill up by 9 a.m. So if you would state your name for the record, please, and answer whatever questions Lead Nash may have. Lead Nash.
Thank you.
I'll give you a short time for that.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Shetton, if you could, obviously some responsibilities have been handed to you that maybe previously you weren't on the hook for, and, you know, I've known you for 10 years and we're both getting grayer. I just don't want to accelerate that.
No age statements allowed.
Well, it's just a statement of fact. Is this something that was sought out by the Met Council? Is this something that mechanically or operationally you can handle?
Mr. Shetton, if you'll.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, members of the committee, my name is Judd Shetton. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Thank you for the questions. The Metropolitan Council, this is a relatively new amendment. Our bill review was basically done related to the language as introduced. So at that point, there was no impact to the council. So we are reviewing it right now. I will say one of the things that we are trying to understand is currently the council has no real insurable interest in this. And so that may be difficult, considering trying to find a policy that would be able to support this direction. So we are looking at that. I know we're going to be talking to the county later this afternoon to have these conversations go a little bit further and try to do that prior to it coming up in the Transportation Committee. I will say that this definitely has caught our interest, and you know, honestly, we have a few concerns that we need to discuss with the parties involved here.
Thank you for your response.
Last question, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Shetland, I'm sure that you're going to be providing some of the background data that will be feeding the fiscal note, but I mean, I would imagine this is going to require additional headcount, some fiscal outlay for various things. Is that what we can expect to be forthcoming? And perhaps that's more for the author. But obviously, there's going to be costs incurred to do the operational aspects of this. Do you have an idea of how that's on a scale, what that looks like?
Mr. Shetland.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, I do not. However, we do provide indemnification related to the North Star service, our light rail service, so we have some experience in this area. And again, since this amendment has come up rather quickly, we need to do that analysis related to this particular project. However, I'd be happy to follow up with you and the members of the State Government Finance Committee if you would like, but I do not want to get out ahead of myself with providing something that I need our experts to be able to provide.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just think that this is potentially troublesome, particularly with the rapidity of this amendment being introduced, to the point that the Met Council doesn't even have full grasp of what it entails. So I would encourage members to vote no.
Thank you, Lead Nash. Seeing no further discussion, the motion before us is to re-refer House File 4691 as amended to transportation. Representative Cagle, do you have any closing comments?
Just want to thank the committee for the discussion, and I'm definitely going to be working on this bill between now and transportation. So.
Thank you very much. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 4691, as amended, is re-referred to transportation. Next, we have Representative Hollins and House File 4515. Welcome, Representative Holland. Since you're not a member of the committee, I will re-refer House File 4515 to the General Register. If you'd like to tell us about your bill, please.
Thank you so much, Chair Cleavorn, Lead Nash, and committee members. Hopefully, this is going to be the shortest bill on your calendar today. I'm here to present House File 4515, which is a statute that, or which is a bill that would repeal an old statute. So, in 1979. There was a statute created that prohibits the city of St. Paul, in particular, from charging residential customers franchise fees on electricity and gas usage during the months of November through April. Because electricity use peaks in summer and gas use peaks in winter, the impact of this limitation is that residents pay higher fees on their electricity use than on their gas use. And this sends the wrong message and the wrong market signal from a climate perspective, with electricity being cleaner and trying to get to net zero by 2040. So this bill would repeal the 1979 statute allowing the city of St. Paul to move into talks with Xcel for the franchise agreement renewal with more flexibility for creating a fair fee structure that avoids sending negative market signal from a climate action perspective. I really want to note that the repeal would not bring about immediate changes to the fee structure. The current electric and gas franchise agreements between St. Paul and Xcel run through August 2026 and reflect not charging residential fees in the winter months. So the new fee structure could then be worked out between the parties without the 1979 limitation. And I've brought one testifier, who is the City of St. Paul's Chief Resilience Officer, Russ Stark, and he is available to answer any questions that folks might have.
All right. Just questions, not...
Well, he can testify, too, if you want.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for having me. Russ Stark, Chief Resilience Officer of the City of St. Paul and Mayor Carter's office. Representative Hollins covered the issue here. We have not been able to track down the origin of this particular limitation that only applies to St. Paul. Going into negotiations with Xcel coming up, we're anticipating that we want the flexibility to be able to structure the fee in the way that makes the most sense for our community today. And Excel has indicated that they are neutral on this particular bill.
All right. Thank you very much. Members, do we have any questions? Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hollins. I'm going to be on, I hate franchise fees. I mean, I think that it is, I'm conflicted. I think it's wrong that St. Paul is prohibited from using it with when all other cities can. But, you know, franchise fees are a way to bury spending that local units of government don't want to put on their ad valorem tax revenues. And I think it's wrong. I think that the bill should, if I would have thought about this, I would have had a bill that literally prohibited franchise fees from any municipality. I think it's, you know, because XL doesn't care because they just collect it, you know, and every month they send a check to the city for money that the city wants to bury in people's electric bill. And it hides city spending. It's another revenue stream for cities that, you know, honestly, we already have ways to raise those revenues. So I'm sorry, I don't have a question, Madam Chair. You know, I have franchise fees in my city, and I fought them like nuts and lost. But I just think it's a terrible way for us to do business. And I think I am going to bring a bill to get rid of franchise fees. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. I see no further questions from the committee. So I will renew our motion that House File 4515 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and House File 4515 is re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you.
Next, we have House File 4231. And before we begin 4231, I just want to let everyone know we have a lot of testifiers. We will be holding testimony very tight. Please keep your comments to less 2 minutes or less as we go forward, and that will still give us 30 minutes of testimony. So we want to make sure that your voices are heard in the room. This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. So Representative Sinsomaria, if you would please tell us about your bill.
Yes, thank you, Chair Cleavorn. Thank you, committee members. I will try to keep my introduction brief because we have, as you mentioned, a lot of testifiers here today. So this bill is actually fairly simple, and I do have an amendment. So would you like me to move, move the amendment?
I'm happy to move the A1 amendment. Would you like to tell us about
the
amendment?
Yeah, so the A1 amendment does one kind of substantial thing, and then the rest is just adding in some of the statutory language about the statutes that we are changing. So it does limit the bill to just cities of the first class, and then it adds in some of the statutes that are affected by the bill.
Great. Thank you very much. Members, is there any discussion to the A1? Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Why are you wanting to limit to the city of the first class?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Nadeau.
Representative Sinsomaria.
Yeah, sorry. So this came up in some conversations. I think, you know, the cities that are pushing this forward are really cities of the first class. That's where I have had the most experience with cities really wanting the power that is in this bill. And I think there was, you know, some concern. This bill allows cities more power to kind of regulate certain industries and certain industrial sites that are within them. I think there was concerns around potentially smaller towns that have very limited number of businesses. But I will say that, you know, I can speak for the city of Minneapolis saying we really want this. But if there are cities outside cities of the first class that would like this power, I'm very open to continued conversation about it.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion to the A1? All those in favor of adoption of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the A1 is adopted. To your bill 4231 as amended.
Thank you. So this bill is fairly simple. It adds a provision that gives cities the ability to phase out sites that include production, processing, and industrial uses. So currently, cities only have the ability to amortize or phase out businesses that are adult-only bookstores, theaters, or adult-only businesses. And this broadens that to include for cities of the first class, production, processing, and industrial uses. This bill is very personal. It came to me through organizing of members of the South Minneapolis community related to a site that is very close to my house, the Smith Foundry, that has for years residents have been talking about the pollution that comes from this site. There is now kind of involvement of the EPA and the MPCA around the potential pollution and the impact on community members. And so we have cities, including the city of Minneapolis that you'll hear from today, that is now saying we want to have more tools in our toolbox to be able to regulate and to ensure that when we change our zoning to say that, you know, this type of industrial use does not make sense, is not compatible with the current community or the current residential uses, they have the ability to phase out those businesses. It does not mean that all cities would have to use this. It is just giving them one more tool in the toolbox. And I think, as you'll hear from the testifiers today, you know, we know that cities change over time. The community that, you know, I'm very familiar with in South Minneapolis, you know, is now a very residential community. It has, you'll hear today from, there's a child care center that is now very close to a number of industrial sites. And so what maybe made sense in terms of the planning 100 years ago no longer makes sense. And so our city's zoning has now been updated to reflect that. But right now, all of these sites are still grandfathered in, and so the city does not really have tools to be able to phase out industrial sites that we know are no longer compatible with the neighborhoods around them. So that's what the bill does, and I would now like to turn it over to my testifiers to share a little bit more.
Thank you very much. And we, Representative, you want to pull up another chair, so you have three chairs there for your, and you can move to one of the other chair. Thank you, Representative Nadeau, and that way we can move the testifiers more quickly. So first, we will have Councilmember Chaudhry, followed by Councilmember Ellison. If you'd please come forward. I will ask the public to please hold your applause. I love the enthusiasm, but we'll just try to get through the testimony. We want to make sure we can hear every voice today. Councilmember Chaudhry, when you're ready, if you'll please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Councilmember Oreen Chaudhry. I am a representative of the 12th Ward on the south side of Minneapolis, and I am here as an individual council member to just first off share that my community in the south side is adjacent to the ward that represents the East Phillips neighborhood. And the East Phillips neighborhood is a really special working class neighborhood that's largely Black, Brown, and Indigenous. And the conditions in which the community has had to live is really one that paints a picture of environmental injustice. There's a arsenic triangle from a Superfund site, bituminous roadways, an asphalt plant, Smith Foundry, where iron castings are created. And we have really created an area where we're concentrating polluting industries that are impacting the health, the well-being, and the futures of so many of our residents in this one single neighborhood. And the residents that I represent care deeply about the fact that the city needs to step up and be a part of shaping what our city can do in terms of mitigating environmental injustice and making sure that we're ensuring the health and well-being of all. So I'm here to urge you to support this bill because it will give council members like me the ability to represent my community and have the tools necessary as a local government to enact an ordinance and prove that this is for the public good and essentially correct the mistakes of the past so we can build a city where we are building for a community that can have some of that land and health and justice back to them after hundreds of years of compounding pollution and disinvestment.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we will have Councilmember Eliason, followed by Karen Clark. Thank you. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, committee members. My name is Jeremiah Ellison. I'm a Northside resident, born and raised, and I represent the 5th Ward on the Minneapolis City Council. I can't add too much more than my colleague already added, except to say that this is not an area that's concentrated in just one part of the city, but it's concentrated in just a few parts of the city. North Minneapolis is certainly impacted. We have a concentration of heavy industrial uses along the river, right? So this isn't only impacting our residents, but it's also impacting our natural resources. It's impacting our ability to enjoy the landscape that we have and that we were gifted with in Minneapolis. You know, many of the community members behind you fought really hard to both catch institutions like Northern Metals, who are caught pumping pollution into the air. But Northern Metals is not the only organization, is not the only, polluting industry in North Minneapolis. We know that there are a lot of contributing factors that push heavy particulate matter into the air. And what that means is higher lead levels in the blood of kids. It means respiratory issues and as well as other issues across the neighborhood. And so if we are able to sort of use this tool, right, if there's a precedent for using this tool when it comes to more moralistic governance, you know, adult bookstores and that kind of thing, then I would think that we should have an ability to leverage this tool when it comes to real impacts and harms happening in people's bodies because of the environments that they're in. So thank you.
Thank you very much, council members. Please, may we have Karen Clark, followed by Melissa Lorenz. Representative Clark, it's good to see you back. If you would state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Sure, Karen Clark, and I'm a former colleague. And thank you, Chair Cleburne and members of the committee. It's great to see both familiar older faces and new faces. So I'm really pleased to be able to talk with you briefly today. I've been working since I retired about 5 years ago on the issue of environmental justice as a very close to my heart issue, and I worked on it with many of you here too. And I just wanted to say a couple of brief things, and I will try to keep this very short. As was explained by our author, who I'm so proud is carrying this legislation, this is a critical tool, and it's an optional tool that we want to give back to our cities. When I served here, we actually tried to pass legislation like this, 2017. We couldn't get it through. We had opposition from our city. Today, you just heard from two folks today who strongly support it, who represent our elected officials in our city. A lot has changed in the city of Minneapolis in those years. And one of the things is the understanding, the science and understanding of what environmental toxic exposure does to human health is much more advanced. And I did include for you today a flyer. I think you should have it in your packet there. And I'll just spare you a lot of going through that, except to say the map that you're seeing on the left was actually a map that was created in 2008 and for this legislature by the legislative GIS service. And what you see there are the disproportionate occurrences of several very serious environmental health issues. If you can see those little dots, they represent human beings and having health problems. And I'm not going to go through it except that asthma, childhood lead poisoning, arsenic on our ground, which made us a federal zone for toxic arsenic cleanup, was going on there. And what you see here is the context that for generations, East Phillips, which is actually my neighborhood, has been fighting for environmental justice and improved health for so many years. And again, if you can help us restore this tool, one of the things that's been so frustrating for me, both as a former and when I was in the legislature and then since then, is that the city had for a number of years said, well, we can't do anything about changing the zoning here because the state law forbids us from doing it from these old industries. And as was explained earlier by the testifiers, that can change, and it can change with your vote today. So I please request you to help us put that tool back into force, and be glad to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Clark. We appreciate it, and we like having you with us. We are setting a timer, so when you hear it, if you'll just try to wrap up so that I don't have to ask anyone to wrap up, that'd be awesome. We have Melissa Lorenz, followed by Roxanne O'Brien. If you begin your testimony, state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Cleburne, committee members. My name is Melissa Lorenz. I'm a staff attorney with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy.
Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. For the past couple years, we've been working with community members for environmental justice on zoning in Minneapolis. And we've seen the city make great strides in protecting the health of its residents when it comes to new polluting facilities. But when it comes to existing facilities, as we've heard, the city's hands are tied. This bill would give cities a tool that they can use to protect public health through amortization. Amortization is a method of terminating a non-conforming use by giving it a specific end date. So in other words, it's a way of actually enforcing the zoning code. Currently, when a city decides that a use is no longer appropriate, the city essentially has to let it stay forever. This gives facilities zero incentive to leave. Even when the facility is sold, it could be sold multiple times and change ownership. The nonconformity goes with the land. So that use is just allowed to continue indefinitely. That use has a monopoly, and it actually incentivizes them to stay. Notably, the statute already lets cities amortize adult-only businesses, and they should be able to do the same when it comes to industries that are causing asthma and cancer clusters. So this bill corrects that important discrepancy. The exact industries to be amortized would be determined at the local level and with constitutional protections in place to protect property owners. Case law tells us that the city must provide due process when making these decisions. And the city must also provide enough time so the landowner can recover its investment. So that could be 2 years or 20 years, depending on the type of the facility and things like depreciation. This is an important tool for cities to protect residents. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is Roxanne O'Brien. I'm a longtime Northsider, North Minneapolis. I also am a longtime community organizer and activist. The people before me mentioned a place called Northern Metals, and that's kind of where I started at. There was a facility in my neighborhood that I had heard wanted to increase their emissions by 1,000%. So that was like in 2011. That was a long journey, and I'm here to support this bill because I think communities fight too hard and that we need systemic change. It's hard to fight site by site. And that fight that Northside had with Northern Metals was over 20, 40 years before I got there, but I spent 12 years of my own life fighting that facility. That facility had multiple fires. It was a fire hazard right on the Mississippi corridor. Northside has no access to the river. Our river is overpolluted by multiple different factories. Northern Metals was just one, so I ended up learning about all these other ones. But just for an example, Northern Metals caught fire multiple times. There was also a point where there was a consent decree that they were supposed to move in 2019 because they had been found to be violating their permit multiple times. We entered in a litigation with the state, with the AG's office and the city of Minneapolis, and then a whistleblower came out a week later and said that they had falsified their records 9 times, so that's 9 felonies in 1 month. We have no idea how many times they had been doing that for decades. And so although we were happy that Northern Metals eventually left because they were afraid of an evidentiary hearing, they moved to Becker, and they 3 months later, they burned for 5 days using 500 million gallons of water to put it out. So we don't think anybody deserves this in anybody's neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you so very much for your testimony today. We will now have Kathleen Scheller and Stacey Gurren-Sherman. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Kathleen Scheller. I'm a public health professional, and I serve as policy director with Health Professionals for Healthy Climate. We are a network of doctors, nurses, and public health and other professionals across Minnesota. And I'm testifying in support of this bill. This bill will enable cities to have another critical tool to phase out polluting facilities from overburdened communities. Unfortunately, in Minnesota, we have many communities like Phillips and North Minneapolis where we've put our polluting highways and other polluting industries disproportionately affecting the health of these communities. So, for example, Phillips and North Minneapolis encompass zip codes that have the highest rates of asthma hospitalization and asthma emergency department visits for young people, for people under 17. So pollution has real impacts on our health. And we have some unacceptable health disparities in the state of Minnesota. BIPOC communities experience poorer health compared with their white counterparts, including a shorter lifespan, higher incidence of heart disease, cancer, asthma, and diabetes, as well as higher rates of infant and maternal mortality. Black and American and Indian infants are twice as likely to die before their first birthday as white infants. This bill gives cities an additional tool to address pollution sources in communities that can really make a difference in their health. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We will now have Stacey Gurin-Sherman, followed by Allison Lend.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to members of the committee for the opportunity to testify. I'm a very grateful and proud constituent of Representative Sensenmura in District 63A and also Minneapolis City Council member Jason Chavez in Ward 9, where Smith Foundry is located. I live with my husband in the Corcoran neighborhood of South Minneapolis, about a mile from Smith Foundry, which for 31 years has been operating without a permit, and all the while in violations of laws meant to protect people from harmful airborne and other toxins. Our offspring is a teacher at Anderson Middle School teaching 7th grade science. Anderson is less than a mile from the Smith Foundry. Securio de Amigos Child Care Center is 2/10 of a mile from Smith Foundry. And of course, our indigenous brown and black neighbors in East Phillips are literally in the backyard of the smokestacks of Smith Foundry. This is personal for all of us. And that's why I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 4231 that would give Minneapolis City Council members the right to enact ordinances that would include shutting down Smith Foundry for failure to comply with state law. Last year, I'm not sure if you all know, the Minneapolis City Council passed unanimously a bill that would not allow any more Smith Foundries or bituminous roadways from operating in residential neighborhoods in Minneapolis. But they were restricted from having that bill cover Smith Foundry and bituminous roadways. After 31 years of noncompliance by Smith Foundry and 31 years of either an inability or an unwillingness of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, it's time for the state to let the city step in. We are not against businesses. We are for businesses that operate within the law. We want the same kind of provisions that I have as a homeowner. If I don't keep my house up and it endangers my neighbors, the city can step in and demand that I make compliance or shut my house down. And I know that's happened. It happened to a neighbor across the street from me. This week we received word that bituminous roadways is going to close down. They've made a choice. They don't want to comply with the law, so they're shutting down. Unfortunately, Smith Foundry has made a choice to stay operating in violation of the law. We need to shut down and have the ability to shut down these violators. We've had neighbors and having to see their children become sick with chronic asthma, cardiovascular disease, and they've had to bury them. I just want to end by asking everybody who is here in support of this bill to stand up.
Excuse me. We know everyone is here. I appreciate that, and your testimony is concluded.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we will have Allison Lend, followed by Desiree Detona.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Allison Lind. I'm a resident of South Minneapolis, Ward 12, adjacent to East Phillips. I'm also a pediatric nurse. My 2-year-old son, Eli, goes to daycare across the street from Smith Foundry. in the East Phillips neighborhood of Minneapolis. Like many of the children who live, play, or learn in East Phillips, Eli has significant respiratory issues. Every common cold goes to his lungs. He's on multiple inhalers and medications every day and sees a pulmonologist. Like many in the community, I have frequently reported odors and fumes coming from Smith Foundry to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, MPCA, and 311. The responses from MPCA have been frustratingly inadequate. At a recent community forum, officials told us that Smith releasing low levels of lead into the neighborhood is okay, despite my knowledge as a pediatric nurse that no level of lead is safe, especially for young children. Moreover, despite repeatedly violating the Clean Air Act, Smith is allowed to continue to operate in the urban neighborhood of East Phillips across from a daycare, as it is grandfathered in. This leaves community members like me desperate to protect our children, feeling powerless. Like many, I have lost sleep worrying about the potential effects of Smith's pollution on my son's health. It's disheartening to know that the state's policy of protecting grandfathered industries like Smith shields them from real responsibility. I would hope that our state of Minnesota prioritize the health and well-being of our communities. I support HF 4231 proposed by Representative Sensomura because it allows municipalities to phase out polluting industries like Smith when they no longer conform to the underlying zoning code. The protection of our communities and most importantly our children should be non-negotiable and controlled locally. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for sharing your personal story. We have Desiree Detona, followed by Tony Quilis. If you'll please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Desiree Detona. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm a Minneapolis resident, and I'm here in support of HF 4231. My 4.5-year-old son, Milo, and soon my new baby girl, attend Circulo de Amigos Child Care Center. This preschool in the East Phillips neighborhood has become very important to our family. It's a place where each staff member knows you and your child's name the moment you walk in the door. They say, Buenos dias, mi amor, to Milo, and hold his hand and walk him to his classroom. He feels loved and safe there, and he learns so much. So you can imagine my disappointment when I started smelling foul odors coming from the Smith Foundry when dropping off my son in the mornings. I soon learned about all of the issues with air quality compliance and permitting the foundry has had over the years. And after attending community meeting after community meeting, listening to the MPCA make excuses and present year-long permitting plans that still don't address the core issues around the community's concerns about our health, we're turning to you for help. After months of attending Circulo, we noticed our son Milo was having a lot of respiratory distress when he gets sick. Several times, simple colds sent us to the emergency room, and now he's been diagnosed with reactive airway disease, which is a precursor to asthma. Asthma runs rampant among the children growing up in East Phillips, who are constantly exposed to the poor air quality that results from having industries like Smith Foundry and Bituminous Roadways as their neighbors. A factory like Smith Foundry does not belong in a densely populated area, let alone across the street from a child care center. Our state law needs to reflect this and empower communities to phase out these facilities that no longer conform to current zoning laws, especially when it is clear that their presence is making people sick. Please help us keep our children out of the ER. Make their backyards and their preschools a healthy and safe place to be. Please vote in favor of HF 4231. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we will have Tony Quilis, followed by Kyle Macarius.
Morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tony Quilis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I want to appreciate you and the committee members allowing me to make a couple of brief comments on House File 4231. I wanted to start off by thanking Representative Sensomura for the A1 amendment and addressing some of my concerns because this bill would have been statewide impact. It is now limited down to the cities of the first class. But still, as we grow our economy here in Minnesota and foster economic development and create jobs, this is uncertainty for businesses that are looking to expand or locate here. And specifically in that area, there are concerns about financially with startups and businesses that look to expand as they go to get loans from their financial institutions. Those financial institutions will probably give pause and look at those businesses because they can be put out of business by going through and looking by a simple change of a zoning ordinance. So there will be pause for financial institutions, for our startups and people looking to expand. My second concern is I understand they're going to be defined by ordinance, but it's the broad and undefined terms of production, processing, and industrial uses. So we're concerned that these ordinances could create a patchwork between these cities of the first class, but also it could impact possibly woodworking shops, body shops, hospitals, and maybe even breweries. So, Madam Chair, thank you for allowing me to express my concerns today about House File 4231.
Thank you. And I don't know what it is about your name that I constantly mispronounce it, so please accept my humble apologies. And I will try to do better.
I'm talking to Mr. Makarios because you always get mine right.
Thank you. If you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Good morning. My name is Kyle Makarios, and I'm here on behalf of the Teamsters Joint Council 32. The Teamsters represent thousands of workers in production, processing, and industrial facilities located in cities of the first class, including 50 Teamsters who work every day at the Smith Foundry in South Minneapolis. We are strongly opposed to this bill. There is nothing more important to the Teamsters than making sure that our members have safe places to work and safe communities to live in. And I and our Teamster representatives have been in every public meeting held in the last year about the Smith Foundry. And we've had numerous conversations with Representative Sensimura, other Minneapolis legislators, and the city about this facility. If this bill is about the Smith Foundry, it is dramatically overbroad. There is no requirement in this bill that a facility be found to be in violation of any pollution standards, and it treats all production, processing, and industrial facilities the same as it treats adult use venues, and is something we don't want in our communities. But we do want production, processing, and industrial facilities in our communities, including in cities of the first class. Madam Chair, I've been part of many conversations with legislators in this room and others, and social justice activists who are sincerely interested in increasing the opportunity for good union jobs, blue-collar jobs, for people who live in the core cities, for people of color, for new immigrants, for formerly incarcerated people. But pushing good union blue-collar jobs out of the core cities is the exact wrong approach to take if we want to make these opportunities available or increase the racial diversity of our unions. Further, what happens to workers at these facilities when properties are amortized? I'm glad to hear from the MCEA that landowners will be made whole when facilities are shut down, but there is no mention in this bill or in the amendment or from any of the testifiers, and there's no plan from the city council or the city council members to take care of workers who are thrown out of their jobs. We strongly encourage you to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We appreciate hearing from you. Next, we will have Justice Jones, followed by London Stewart. If you would please state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Yes, I can. Hi, my name is Justice Jones. Thank you for allowing me to come in and testify today. I'm an artist, organizer, and educator born and raised in Minneapolis, and I'm here to give my two cents on the amortization bill. Environmental injustices against communities of color are not a new thing. The dehumanization of people below the poverty line or any person deemed as other is not new either. The current systems in which we operate as a collective are no longer sustainable for our future. They run on outdated logic and exactly as intended. When we run out of natural resources and healthy human beings, these systems will lose their value. The amortization bill gives the city the opportunity to phase out major polluters that have had a significant impact on public health. It's a no-brainer to correct outdated zoning decisions that segregated our cities, such as redlining, which deemed Black, Indigenous, people of color in low-income neighborhoods as less desirable. What else is less desirable? Pollution and all of the public health and environmental issues that come with it. If there's no way to phase out these polluters and they get to stay regardless of the zoning law, then corrections to these poor zoning practices is pointless. I won't go into a laundry list of wrongs against marginalized communities that should be corrected because we have already had those conversations. We're well past the time for gathering and sharing information about injustice, systemic racism, and talking about the poor decision-making skills of our predecessors. People have set themselves on fire to try to get us to listen to how our current way of life can no longer work. Now is the time for corrective action, and this bill would give cities the opportunity to practice the application of just one of many necessary corrective actions. As I near the end of my time allotted to speak, I leave you with one question. In the future, when you are asked how your time served in your position was beneficial to the greater good, what will be your answer?
Thank you so much for your testimony. We will have London Stewart, followed by Danielle Teagan. You have to state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is London Stewart. I'm 15 years old. I have lived on the east side of St. Paul my whole life. Living in a neighborhood with factories and other polluters can cause many health problems, including breathing problems. At a young age of 3, I had my first asthma attack, and an asthma attack that ended in an emergency room every year after that until I turned 11. Growing up with asthma and the feeling of having limited breathing is the worst thing in the world. Sometimes I still have asthma triggers that make breathing difficult. Going to a city or a neighborhood without polluted air, I can feel the change in my lungs and don't have to try so hard to get air. Why would you want to live like that? Do you know how it feels to have limited breathing? Keeping polluters around has no good cause in our environment or communities. We are all affected by the air, so why keep factories around? For money? We can find new, clean, renewable resources. My opinion is that life is more valuable than money. I don't want the planet and people to die because of pollution. Some may not think this is a big deal, but to people like me, it matters a lot and has a big impact on my life. Think of the future and how you would want to be able to live your life. Thank you.
I just want to thank you for your testimony. I love having students in front of the committee. And I will say I share the same chronic illness, so I totally hear you and feel you. So thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Next, we will have Danielle Teagan, and Rob Hendrickson will be on deck. You'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Danielle Teagan, and there's been such beautiful, powerful testimony. So I don't want to reiterate any of those things. What I will say is we do, most of us, have taken off of work to be here. I have to take the whole day off because I have to take my son to the doctor who is struggling with his asthma today. As a longtime Northside resident, a choice to stay and to organize and to be there. I just want to reiterate, I take this spot in the seat very seriously, one out representing hundreds who have worked particularly around removing Northern Metals from North Minneapolis, the thousands who it impacts. So this seat is a little intimidating, being the voice for so many who are pleading and begging for you to give them a tool to allow cities and communities to organize on their own behalf, to trust them to know what they need. It's not about being against business or against profit, or it's for healthy communities. And so we're talking about a phase out. We're talking about a tool that allows mothers and parents to continue to go back to work and to not have to keep taking off of work, to keep fighting and organizing, especially when you're talking about permanent residency that gives free pass to businesses that no one else gets. So we are begging and pleading for you to see the humanity of all of the faces of people here and who that impacts, to give them the tool that makes organizing for their own self-actualization more possible. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And when you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hey, everyone. My name is Rob Hendrickson. Thank you, Chair and Committee, for letting me speak today. I'm a current resident of East Phillips neighborhood in Minneapolis, and I'm here in support of HF 4231, allowing cities and, by extension, communities the ability to determine what does and does not belong in their residential areas. I remember pretty vividly when one of the first times this concept really occurred to me. It was one of those cool winter mornings where the brisk, still air kind of feels like a slap in the face when you walk out the door, but quickly becomes quite tranquil as you observe the world waking up. I was biking to my job at a local rental equipment rental store along the nationally renowned Minneapolis Greenway, enjoying the frost and on the trail, on the apartments, on the houses, my glasses as it glistened under the moon and the city lights. But about 5 minutes into my journey, I approached this cloud of what appeared to be steam flowing out of a vent and collecting into the valley of the trail, maybe like 50 feet long. And as I, you know, plunged into this cloud, I took my first deep breath and quickly realized that I couldn't breathe. And I just held my breath through the rest of the way. And emerging, I just thought, what, you know, that doesn't really, what's that doing here, you know? And since then, I've moved within three blocks of that source, which I've known now to be the Smith Foundry. And I've finished a master's program in studying the spatial distribution of air pollution. I'm serving on the Southside Green Zone Council, where we advise the city of Minneapolis on environmental justice, which in our work plan from the start was to change this legislation. So in this notebook, I've gathered similar testimonies. You've heard a bunch. Thank you for your time. I urge you to vote in favor of this. Thanks for the opportunities.
Thank you very much. And I would just like to thank each testifier who came today and shared their personal experience with us. That is the purpose of this committee room, and this is your house and your voice matters. So thank you very much. With that, I have no additional testifiers listed. Is there anyone else in the room who wants to testify? Please come forward. Right. And I'll just ask you to keep your testimony to 2 minutes. Please begin. State your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne, members of the committee. My name is Andrea Lovell. I am with the Minnesota Environmental Justice Table. I've spent the last several years working for environmental justice issues in our state. And I have done that after having grown up in environmental justice communities and having a battery of health effects from growing up in those communities. So this is a deeply personal issue for me. I just want to add one key point here, which is I think when we talk about we as a community and what we want as a community to be in our communities, I think we really need to talk about who the we is. And so I think you've seen really good evidence here today through the testimony, seeing how many community members want more tools to be able to have a say in what is in their community and what doesn't stay in their community. And so I think it's important to recognize that this does not automatically remove businesses. This just gives us a tool to be able to have a say in what is in our community and what doesn't stay.
Thank you very much for your testimony. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you so much. My name is Joseph Vital. Appreciate you guys hearing us, and I'm speaking in support of the bill. I'm a resident of the East Phillips neighborhood. My family's right behind me, and I just don't want the debate of is this anti-job or is it pro-job. In fact, it's the opposite. This is pro-job, and it's about what type of jobs we want in our neighborhoods. As what Andrew has recently stated, is it won't widely spread, eliminate businesses left and right. In fact, it's going to determine what the next economy is going to look like in neighborhoods like East Phillips, where it's looking at renewable energy, it's looking at green infrastructure. And so, much like the tools that we're trying to give back to the city, we are looking at the tools that the state also provides for our workers, for our industries, for phases, for transition plans. And so we will be working close with our neighbors because this is a working class neighborhood. It will always be a working class neighborhood. And, you know, I hope you support it. And we will also be supporting our workers along the way. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And to Lead Nash, I'm going to say to you, when I first took over chairwomanship of this committee, you and I had a discussion and an agreement that we would always put community voices first in our committee. Because we are laying this bill over and we will have much opportunity to work with the author of the bill to make sure that all of the voices at the member table are heard, I'm going to limit member discussion of this bill to 5 minutes because we have two more bills that we need to hear today and get out of committee. So putting community voice first was the key today. And then I will continue to work with you and with the author as we have laid this bill over. So I just want to say that. Lead Nash, would you like to begin, or would you like one of your members?
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that as it is pressing in front of us today, that each of my members who wishes to speak today will have the opportunity to do so today.
We still have two more bills to get through, and because the bill is being laid over, and we all have an opportunity to have multiple conversations before this bill would move into any policy bill that we would have, I'm going to ask, we are going to cut this off at 10 minutes to the hour. So who would you like to begin? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne, and thank you, Representative Sensenbrenner. I have two. I just have two questions, and you might not know the answer, but maybe someone can help me get the information. So my first question is, the testimony in the bill seems to be centered around Smith Foundry. Do you have any sort of data as to how many businesses in this area that this bill could potentially affect? Do you know?
Representative Sensenbrenner.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Harder. So I know more about Fort Minneapolis, and I do believe we have some maps of the businesses that would be affected by the bill within Minneapolis that I can share with the committee. I would probably need to work to get some more information about all cities of the first class, but I can definitely share that.
Thank you very much. Representative Harder.
And one more question. I think this is more for the city council, but I don't think I see them here anymore. I'm just curious, the follow-up of the bill, like if it's passed and the city enacts that, I'm just curious as to what the financial impact would be to the city, you know, and the services that the city provides to the residents. But perhaps someone from the city council can get that information to me.
Representative, can you ask them to provide that information to the committee, please?
Yeah, just for clarification, are you saying, like, what it would cost to – can you explain a little bit more about what costs you're imagining?
Representative Harder.
Right. So thank you, Chair Claiborne. So maybe pertaining to this particular business, because this is what the bill seems to be centered around, is around Smith Foundry. So if this business left, what would the impact be to the city? Because it would be – this business, but then if it's, as it pertains to other businesses, then the follow-up would, you know, continue. So that would is what I'm looking at. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harder. Senator Mira?
Yes, I can try to find that information, Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And mine's just a short statement, brief statement. You know, in the testimony, I appreciate all the testimonies today. It was all we the people. It's our city. We want to do this. And I agree totally with this. Being a local mayor and really liking this, I think there's some work on this bill, but we passed the 2040 bill limiting how energy is going to happen. And like in my community, my coal plant is 500 miles away where we buy power for cheaper for people out of North Dakota. I think this is a good bill to bring it back to local control and let them decide what they want in their communities, whether it's cleaner energy or what they want. I like this bill, but I just want to refer 2040, we passed that through the legislation. I think we should have slowed that roll, and we should have gave the power back to the local communities, the we, the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joy. Lead Nash.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. To the author, so I've heard all the testimony, and thank you for the student who was here. I think that's awesome. The in lines 1.12 and 1.13, there's some definitions there that might be a little open-ended and kind of broadly interpreted in application. Is there openness from the author to tighten that down? And I want to use some examples that I've heard in other places. So everyone knows that I'm a big fan of breweries and distilleries and places like that who do create some odors. So when you malt something or when you're distilling something, there is a strong smell that comes out of it. It's not going to hurt anybody. But I want to make sure that we're not doing something through this fairly broad language that would maybe shut that down. Or other examples, you know, we would encourage a small woodworking facility to open up to put people to work. That creates a smell. It might create a little sawdust, and, you know, there are lots of ways to ameliorate that. Small meat processing plants for more higher-end, you know, stuff like that. My wife was an industrial engineer, and she shared that she toured an onion processing plant. And she said, I knew I was in the neighborhood because I could smell it before I even saw it. I just want to make sure that when, if this bill becomes law, that maybe you can be more granular in the definition and maybe another author's amendment so that when city council members change roles, maybe, or you bring somebody in, that there isn't, it's not an easier on-ramp to go after businesses that really aren't offending anybody other than I hate the smell of onions, right? I don't, but I'm just saying. I just want to make sure that if this is going to become law, that we put some teeth to the language, because words mean things, and I want to make sure that we're not opening up a door for city councils who may have ulterior motives or capricious motives to go after businesses that are really not hurting anybody. If you would be willing to.
No. Representative Sensenmiller.
Yeah, certainly open to conversation. I think you bring up some good points, so would love to talk more.
Thank you very much. And seeing no further discussion, I want to thank you. And would you like closing comments?
Yeah, you know, I would just say, you know, imagine a neighborhood, you know, that has a bike pathway, childcare centers, schools, parks, a great neighborhood, but right in the middle of it is an adult use bookstore. I think we would all say, huh, that maybe doesn't really make sense. Maybe that business at one time made sense, but right now with the way the neighborhood has grown, the neighborhood has changed, it doesn't make sense anymore. We already have that law, right? We already give our cities and our towns the ability to say, hey, that actually doesn't make sense. How do we work to phase that business out? Well, you know, weighing all the things of maybe it brings jobs, maybe it, you know, brings certain economies. I think we should also widen that to say that we also have these industrial sites that are also sometimes negatively harming our communities. And I trust my city council to be able to weigh some of the different, you know, things that you would need to weigh in terms of labor and economy and jobs, but also thinking about the health impacts and how business impacts communities. So I trust them to be able to have this power, open to conversations about, you know, what we would maybe need to do in terms of guardrails. But thank you for the conversation today. Thank you for the community members that joined us.
And thank you so much for your work and your commitment to improve the bill. I appreciate it. And with that, that bill is laid over for possible inclusion. I have a conflict, so Vice Chair Hewitt will be taking over the rest of the committee. And with that, I will hand over the chairmanship.
Representative Anderson. Members, before us we have House File 4507. Representative Anderson's bill. Representative Nash, would you be willing to move Representative Anderson's bill to the General Register?
Mr. Chair, I would move House File 4507 be referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Nash. And Representative Anderson, to your bill.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the members as well for hearing our bill today. In the interest of time, this is kind of a cleanup bill. There's been some changes made in the hospital operation. This hospital is back in Benson in Swift County, Minnesota. And in the interest of time, I'll let my testifier, who traveled 150 miles to be here with us this morning, to explain the reason for the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Mr. Anderson, am I right on that?
Correct.
Please go ahead with your testimony.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Dan Anderson. I'm here representing Swift County Benson Hospital. And the driver behind this request was a change that occurred January 1 of 2023, where the Swift County Benson Hospital Board, through an operating lease agreement, turned over operations of the hospital and attached clinic to the Centracare health system. So under the terms of that agreement, Centracare became responsible for really all operations of the hospital. And as a result of that, the duties and responsibilities of the Swift County Benson Hospital Board were virtually eliminated. The Centracare uses a model of a local operating board to oversee the operations of their facilities. And so really all of the responsibilities of the Swift County Benson Hospital Board were transferred to that local operating board. And so this request is a reflection of that change that occurred. The previous number of board members had been 9, and under the terms of the original legislation, 2/3 of those were Swift County appointees, and 1/3 was City of Benson. This request would reduce the number to 6, and keep that 2-to-1 ratio in place. This has been not formally requested by under Swift County or the City of Benson, but I was at their January meetings and explained that we would be pursuing this, and both of those parties or boards were in agreement with us going forward with this change.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson, for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the House that would like to speak on this bill? Well, I think they all left. So bringing it to members' discussion, is there any members that would like to? Nope. Representative Dash, you're good to go.
I'll renew my motion to refer House File 4507 to the General Register.
With Representative Nash referring his motion, Representative Anderson, do you have anything else to say? Such a good bill.
Well, thank you much, Mr. Chair and members. This would also eliminate the need to come down here to the state every time they want to make a change like this. But they corrected the erroneous statute and right, I think it's session law, and also would be allowed to make a change like this by a bylaw back home. So I would encourage your support for this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And all members in favor of this bill, please say aye.
Aye.
All members opposed? Hearing none opposed, the bill is on its way to the General Register.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Shoemaker.
And Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, I will move House File 4201 be referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Nash.
Make sure the referral is...
Nope, it's actually going to Veterans. I'm sorry.
I would make the motion to refer House File 4201 and to go to Veterans.
Thank you, Representative Nash. I appreciate the response. Representative Shoemaker, did I say it wrong again?
Nope, that was good, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, and to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This House file lifts the cap that counties can give to groups to do their Memorial Day projects. Right now, the counties are capped at $3,500 annually. That's a tight number in the statute, and $300 to the different posts for that. This just lifts that so that it works with inflation and can help cover the cost if the county board so chooses to do that. This bill came from a county commissioner in my district. I invited him to come down today, but that's about a four-hour drive for him, and he told me just to go get it done. So that's what I'm doing here. Today with me is John Baker, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Counties Veterans Service Officers, to further explain the bill.
Thank you, Representative Shoemaker. Mr. Baker, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and title for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Baker. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of County Veterans Service Officers. I'm also retired United States Marine Corps. I spent about 25 years in the Marine Corps. This bill, I represent the County Veterans Service Officers from all 87 counties in the state. We've got about 160-plus county veteran service officers. They are often the ones after the county commissioners appropriate what money, the limited amount of money that they can. County veteran service officers are the ones that coordinate Memorial Day and Veterans Day. But we're talking about Memorial Day on this particular bill around the state of Minnesota. And we're just asking that this cap be lifted. Oftentimes, when my county veteran service officers work with veteran service organizations like the Legion, VFW, DAV, they'll have to, my CVSOs will have to pull money out of their own pocket just to make sure that veterans and family members, anybody that is participating in a Memorial Day ceremony gets a cup of coffee or a sandwich or something like that as we memorialize our nation's honored treasure that sacrificed for our country. And so with that, I thank you, Mr. Chair. I thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Baker, and thank you for coming down today. It's a public hearing. Anybody else in the House want to speak on this bill? Seeing none, I go to member discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the bill, Representative Shoemaker. I just wanted to
say I fully support this, and I wanted to clarify for anybody who's watching, and the Sergeant Major will back me up, the differences between Armed Forces Day, Memorial Day, and Veterans Day, they are not the same, and that Memorial Day is for the folks who, as Lincoln said, gave their last full measure of devotion to their country. Let's vote this out and get it going.
And I'm sorry, Representative Nash, we had a thing going, and Representative Berg would like to say something. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I full-on love this bill. I think that there is nothing we shouldn't do for our veterans. We're all sitting here today because of them. So thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. It has my full and full support, and I'm honored to be able to do so.
Any other discussion? Oh, the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say, as chair of the Veterans Committee, this bill will be given the hearing, and we'll be moving it forward with the other bills that are very similar to this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Newton. Seeing that in no other discussion, I'll take the vote. All those in favor? Oh, what did I do wrong? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Nash, you renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 4691 be sent to Veterans.
4201?
That one.
4201. Representative Nash renewing his motion on 4201. This bill, the committee can vote now on moving it to Veterans. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No. Hearing now opposed. It is on its way to Veterans. Thank you, Representative Schumacher. This concludes our business for today. We are adjourned. Next meeting is Tuesday, March 19th. See the website.